Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, May 24th. You know, from time to time, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson comes on with us, often to talk about bills being passed by Congress. Well, today she's here to talk mostly about bills not being passed by Congress. These include some pretty famous bills, the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. Tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of his murder, as you know. President Biden's American Jobs Act and his American Families Act, and the bill to establish a bipartisan commission to investigate the roots and events of the January 6th insurrection. Now, before we bring on Mara, here is part of a video that she retweeted over the weekend. It's Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher of Green Bay, Wisconsin, a video he made while locked in his office in the Capitol on January 6th, in which he pleads with President Trump to call the insurrectionists off.
We have got to stop this. Mr. President, you have got to stop this. You are the only person who can call this off. Call it off. The election is over. Call it off. This is bigger than you. It's bigger than any member of Congress. It is about the United States of America, which is more important than any politician. Call it off. It's over.
Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher on January 6th barricaded in his office. Now, last week, he voted against a January 6th study commission. NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Mara. Welcome back to WNYC.
Happy to be here.
So my New York area listeners and I are pretty unfamiliar with Congressman Mike Gallagher. So who is he?
Well, and we'd have to look him up because I just retweeted that very quickly. Let's look him up. Maybe you can have somebody there do that. And let's see. We know how he voted on the January 6th commission. Let's see how he voted on overturning the 2020 election, which happened after the insurrectionists were removed, physically removed from the Capitol building, because those would be two interesting votes. But Mike Gallagher's statement there really echoed Kevin McCarthy's statement on January 6th, where he felt that Trump was responsible. He had a phone call that has been recounted by Jamie Herrera Butler, another Republican member of Congress, where he implored Trump to call off the insurrectionists. And Trump famously said to him, according to this other congresswoman, I guess, Kevin, these protesters or insurrectionists care more about the election results than you do. So there's been a transformation in the Republican Party from January 6th to now. Now, I'm sure Mike Gallagher has a way of justifying or explaining his vote against a January 6th commission. Maybe he thinks there are other ways of investigating what happened that day. But there's no doubt that there's been a shift from the horror that was bipartisan. People felt that the insurrection was the worst attack on our democracy, that President Trump had something to do with it, egged on the protesters, didn't act quickly enough to try to call them off. And then as time went on and they started thinking more about 2022 and how important it was to keep Trump in the big tent of the Republican Party, they've changed their minds about January 6th and don't seem to want to pay too much attention to it at all and just want to move on.
Right.
So that has very good practical political explanations. They're focused on winning elections, but it has profound implications for our democracy.
And we did look it up. And sure enough, Congressman Mike Gallagher from WNYC. There is WNCY in Wisconsin, which said on January 4th, Wisconsin Republican U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher has signed on to a statement urging an end to election opposition. So he was not one of those calling for the election to be overturned by Congress. But here's one more clip. it's House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, who you just described a minute ago in his interaction with the president at that time. And here's McCarthy speaking back in January when a second impeachment of Trump was in the air, calling for, guess what, instead, a fact-finding commission.
These facts require immediate action by President Trump. Accept his share of responsibility, quell the brewing unrest, and ensure President-elect Biden is able to successfully begin his term. And the president's immediate action also deserves congressional action, which is why I think a fact-finding commission and a censure resolution would be prudent.
So based on that, Mara, should I assume Kevin McCarthy voted for the commission last week?
Well, he's talking about a fact-finding commission. I'm sure he would say that the commission that has been proposed, which is an outside commission, is not the same thing that he was proposing. But the fact that he proposed a censure vote as an alternative to the second impeachment of Donald Trump, that's also significant. Look, Kevin McCarthy has changed his mind. He wants to be speaker. He wants to win the 2022 election. And he is making a pretty interesting bargain that he can, agree with President Trump without quite saying so. I don't think Kevin McCarthy has actually said the words, "I believe the election was stolen from President Trump." Mm-hmm. But he said the other day that Joe Biden is the president. That seems to be the new place that Republicans are landing, the safe lily pad. Yes, he's the president. That's true. He lives in the White House. But they don't want to contradict former President Trump, who believes and continues to state that the election was stolen from him and that Joe Biden was illegitimately elected. But there's no doubt that Kevin McCarthy has undergone a transformation. And that is one of the reasons that there was this huge rift in the House Republican conference and why they booted Liz Cheney out, because she continues to stick to her firm conviction that the Republican Party should not be associated with a lie, the lie that somehow the election was stolen from Donald Trump.
We should point out, however, as you have in your reporting, that 35 Republicans did vote for the January 6th commission last week in the House. That's a small number out of around 200 in the House Republican Conference, but it's a lot more than zero, which Democratic bills often get. I heard you talk about what that means on the NPR Politics podcast the other day. Would you go into that here?
Yeah, I think that 35 people voting for the commission is important. Now, remember, on January 6th, two-thirds of the House Republicans voted to overturn an election that the judicial branch, which is the referee when we have disputes, had determined was free and fair. So a majority of Republicans in Congress and two-thirds of House Republicans voted to overturn a free and fair election. However, and only, I'm trying to remember, 7 Senate Republicans voted to impeach, and how many? 10, I think, House Republicans.
Yeah,
but
I think 10.
35 voting for a commission is significant. If only 10% of the Republican Party is disenchanted and kind of are Liz Cheney Republicans, that's significant. You know, elections in the United States are very, very close. I'm not saying that the Republican Party is splitting apart. I think if there ever, I don't think there's a civil war in the party. I think that the fight for control of the party has been won. It's been won by Donald Trump. But I still think that this kind of dissent is important.
Let's go on to some other bills not being passed by Congress. How is the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act coming? With the anniversary this week, I thought that one was moving toward a bipartisan deal.
Well, it still might. Joe Biden has said he wanted it by Memorial Day. It doesn't seem like he's going to get it, but they're still working on that on Capitol Hill. That's something that both sides said they wanted. There were negotiations. The negotiations seem to be moving forward. I don't know all the details about where they are on immunity, certain kinds of qualified immunity for police, but so far that one seems to be held up.
And a stat I've read is that 24 states plus Washington, D.C. have passed some kind of police reform measures in the last year. And of course, police departments are run locally, except for federal law enforcement. What would the federal bill change that would be more than symbolic?
Well, I'm not actually, I think that you need to talk to somebody who's a better expert on this than me. I am not familiar with the granular details of this bill, but it would certainly provide guidance and funding to states that want to do reform.
I'll tell you one provision that I'm interested in. It's the National Police Misconduct Registry that it would create so that officers fired for misconduct can't latch on with other police departments, which apparently happens frequently. Is this
right.
like
and
with,
that's just a simple matter of sharing data, yeah.
Yeah, and it strikes me, and I wonder what your impression is, that this is like with guns, where Republicans under pressure from the NRA resist cataloging gun crimes at the federal level so that there aren't newsworthy numbers to look at.
Yeah, I think that's possible, and it's unclear to me whether that provision is one of the bigger sticking points or not.
All right, let's go on to two more bills not being passed by Congress right now. President Biden's American Jobs Act and his American Families Act. Physical infrastructure and what he calls human infrastructure, around $4 trillion in spending over the next decade between them. Mara, I see there was an offer in the last few days by the White House to shrink spending on the Jobs Act by about a quarter off Biden's original price tag. Are you familiar with what they're offering?
Yes, that's the what's happening with that. First of all, the American Jobs Act and the American Families Plan is something that Biden did not expect to be on his desk by Memorial Day. This has a longer runway. They need to pass it by the end of the year. He wanted progress by the end of May or July 4th. I don't know if that meant we've asked the White House about this. It's unclear if they meant actual passage on the House floor or just some kind of progress in negotiations. But what's happened is the president came in with this $2+ trillion plan. Republicans came back with something that was a tiny fraction of that. And then the White House made a counteroffer. They cut $500 billion off the original, I think it was $2.2 trillion. And the Republicans dismissed that out of hand. So right now, even though there have been several bipartisan meetings at the White House with Republicans and the president, they are very far apart on three fundamental things. Number one, what is infrastructure? Is it just roads and bridges? Does it include broadband and high-tech manufacturing? How much infrastructure should we pay for? And then the third thing, which is really important, is how do we pay for it? Do we pay for it with user fees, which is what the Republicans want? Or do we raise taxes on people making more than $400,000 a year and corporations? That's what the White House wants. In their counteroffer, they did not change the pay-fors. In other words, they're still proposing to pay for it the same way. And many Democrats think that in the end, Biden will have to pass this bill the same way he passed the COVID relief bill, which is under a budget maneuver known as reconciliation. It's basically a carve out to the filibuster, which means you can pass a bill with 51 votes in the Senate, can't be filibustered. That's how COVID relief got passed. And maybe that's how American Families Act will be passed. But we're not done yet. I think negotiations are still ongoing. There is a group of bipartisan senators trying to work something out. That one is a work in progress.
There are sometimes groups of bipartisan House members or senators who work in good faith with each other, but really the leadership on one side or another or both isn't interested in a compromise bill for political reasons. I'm curious of your impression of, in this case, if either side wants a compromise, or would they rather both have a one-party bill and an issue?
That's a really good question. Infrastructure was supposed to be the exception to the rule of hopeless polarization on Capitol Hill. Infrastructure has traditionally been something that's bipartisan. Anything that makes the United States more competitive with China has had bipartisan support. And there was hope that certain chunks of Biden's infrastructure agenda could be broken off: universal broadband, roads and bridges, cleaning up lead pipes, you know, that kind of thing, that maybe they could be passed separately with bipartisan votes. Then the human infrastructure parts that Republicans aren't interested in, the child care funding to keep elderly people cared for in their homes, things like that, free community college, free pre-K, those things would be passed with Democratic votes only. But it's still unclear how much of this will be in one package and how much of this Republicans would like to vote for. Don't forget, after the COVID relief bill was passed with no Republican votes, several Republicans were touting its provisions to their constituents. Mm. So there are many things inside the infrastructure package that are very, very popular and that Republicans like. But They don't want to, many of them do not want to give President Biden a win. That's true on both sides when there's divided government. And also, they don't want to vote for any tax hikes to pay for it.
Let me drill down on one of those things that you mentioned. And if you're just joining us, listeners, my guest for another few minutes is NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. The American Families Act portion of that two-part infrastructure bill, basically building a new babies and toddlers infrastructure, setting limits on people's out-of-pocket child care expenses for babies, and establishing 2 years of pre-K, which I think would be very popular with families on both sides of the political aisle. There really is a lack compared to other industrialized countries that I imagine crosses party lines. But I don't hear Republicans getting behind this concept. What are the politics of that?
Well, the American Families Plan would strengthen the social safety net. There's been a huge shift in public opinion over the years. The kind of the Reagan Revolution is over. People no longer think that activist government is a bad thing. As you've had more economic inequality, as it's been harder and harder for people to stay in the middle class, they seem to think, you know, we have Social Security for old people, we should have something for families too. And there is a handful of Republicans in the Senate that want to increase the child tax credit. Mitt Romney wants to give cash payments to families. Then they could spend it either on child care outside the home or inside the home. So I think that there are Republicans who are for some of these provisions. But on the whole, the Republican strategy is to say that this is socialism and or it's forcing people into, we've even heard this, corporate child care. And there, I can't imagine there's going to be much Republican support for the human part of the infrastructure plan.
And finally, Mara, not a bill per se, but President Biden's goal of 70% of Americans vaccinated by the 4th of July. How's it going? And is that a partisan issue?
Well, it certainly is a partisan issue in terms of people who say they want to get the vaccine and they don't, although there also is more of an education split there. People who have college educations are more inclined to get the vaccine than people who aren't, regardless of their race or ethnicity. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about herd immunity is that we had someone on NPR yesterday who said it's really not a good idea to think of herd immunity. It's better to think of it as community immunity, because there are communities in the United States that are going to reach the levels of immunity, whether it's 70 or 80%, that is going to be enough to protect them. There are going to be other communities that don't. So I think that many parts of America are on their way to what we were calling herd immunity. And although the vaccination rate has slowed down, there's a huge push to increase it and accelerate it, including all sorts of incentives, employers offering bonuses. You know, Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, even was offering a kind of lottery prize.
Yeah.
So I think that, Cuomo in New York too. So I think that, you know, people are continuing to get vaccinated, but there are pockets of the country where vaccinations are not popular. And there are communities that it's just hard to convince that they should get vaccinated. But I think by July 4th, Joe Biden will have some kind of success to announce.
Ending on a note of optimism, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. We always appreciate it, Mara. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.